This is URN.
The Drama Show Breakdown.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Drama Show. With me this week, Ella, rather than Joe. We don't know where Joe is. We will be discussing that later. We just know he's not coming today.
He's not present.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
And, of course, I'm joined by the lovely Creative Writing Society. What have you got lined up for us today?
Well, today we have three or four pieces, depending on how long we take. And just general us reading our stuff out.
Brilliant. It is the perfect way to start a Sunday.
Of course.
Afternoon at 3. Point is, Sundays are not complete without the Creative Writing Society. So,
thank you.
Danny is up first.
Ah, awesome. Thank you. Hello. It's been a while, actually, since I've been on here.
It's been a few weeks now.
Yeah,
I've been missed you.
Oh, thank you. I've missed doing this as well.
I haven't
been very busy.
I'm sorry. Go on. Go on.
Rude.
Welcome back.
Hey.
Yay. But yeah, today I've got just a short piece today. I will start writing actual story stuff next week. But I just thought I'd do a little thing about emotions because I've been thinking about those quite a bit recently. So this one's actually called Exploring the Emotions. So enjoy. There is nothing more difficult than trying to explain how you feel. Despite that wave of emotion which is desperate to pour out with unwavering determination, there's a firm barrier which somehow manages to impede it. Sometimes it's easy to let those feelings spill out, but at other times, not so much. Sometimes we wonder why we're often at war with ourselves, emotionally anyway. We just can't seem to ascertain why we feel the way that we do. I mean, you'll never know why you felt so angry at a small joke that was made at your expense by your friend, or the overwhelming happiness that encompassed you when your significant other told you that they loved you for the first time. The mind is a strange thing. It both ruins and repairs. But then again, there's that horrible grey cloud, the dreaded apathy. Even when you want to feel, you just can't. The dispassion and the disinterest is almost worse than sadness or anger. At least with those, you know that you're feeling something. With sadness, you can have tears that pour down your face because you've lost someone close to you. Maybe you're just having a bad day. Passion is important. It shows us that we care. Maybe sadness, anger, or even jealousy aren't particularly pretty, but at least they show us that we're capable of feeling something. And to be perfectly honest, I'd rather have that than feel nothing at all.
Wow,
brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I really like that.
Yeah, incredible.
Although I don't know why, the end kind of reminded me of Inside Out, you know, it's like you should feel things rather than like suppressing your emotions.
Don't talk to me about that movie.
I'm going to pretend I know what's going on.
I feel like we need to address this. What?
That movie traumatized me. It was just the ending. It was
don't,
really
don't
good.
Don't spoil the ending. Like, please don't spoil the ending.
This is a kid's film. This is too intense. I was just like, oh God.
It was funny going to the cinema and there were like all these adults trying not to cry and all these kids is like 6 shots going, oh, there's pretty pictures.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It was great. I was watching with my flatmates and they just turned and went, this should be an 18.
It should have been an 18.
Oh, my mum was just sobbing at it. It was brilliant.
Is it that bad? And really need to see it now.
Like you'll come out and you'll be like, what have I just seen? Yeah.
Great. My favourite time of film.
I'll lend you the DVD and you have to let us know how much you cry.
Okay, sure. Absolutely.
I cried.
Moving on, Oren, you're up next.
Howdy. Okay, so this is, I've started my new novel. This is the first chapter, but this is a continuation from last week. You don't need the rest of the stuff, but basically they've just come to assembly and the main character can read minds. That's all the context you need. Amelia, I'm sorry, I mutter, voice almost lost in the thick of the chattering students and the soupy air of an unventilated room. All the heads and bodies are turned to the side. No one looks up ahead at the empty podium in the great hall. It's fine, really, she replies. Her tone and smile denote a sweet civility to them, but her eyes are darkened and pained. I'm doing my annoying act of taking a joke too far, I continue. If anything, blame Parks and Rec. Amelia pulls her lips into a line and snorts. I tilt my head back and groan. Oh, I'm doing my blame someone else's bit again, aren't I? She doesn't answer, but doesn't need to. Sorry. I just get carried away in the spirit of things. It's only because I adore and respect you. That bit I'm being serious about. Okay. Amelia, I pout, petting her arm like a cat. I forgive you, Lily. Please, stop groveling. It's weird when you do it. She fidgets with her earring, the stone glimmering in the light. I know, but I feel bad, I sigh. Well, maybe help Alex out. He needs us now that Lee's been weird. I look over and see him several seats down, expression chillier than the weather, brow dark and heavy like clouds waking to break. I flip my gaze back to Amelia. You care about people a lot, don't you? Not people, my friends. God, I can't believe you two dated. She slaps my hand playfully away. Stop that.
He was sweet and kind, then an upturned chin later, and very civil. We just weren't that compatible. I nod, knowing the feeling, then break into an uncomfortable smile. What, she demands, though a smile appears at her lips as well. Nothing. Sweet, sweet Amelia. Mr. Cross struts to the podium, sweeps his gaze over the assembly hall, the noise being suffocated in an instant. He smirks and thanks and greets us with the least sincere hello known to humanity. His speech is affected and dangerous, bordering on the insane. He speaks vaguely of goals and achievement, probably Oxbridge no less, and then breaks down into the story, feigning tears. He, the hood rat, who some teachers saw an opportunity for success in, helped him to rein in his life and apply to Oxford. He then describes his grueling efforts and the hard assailing that was the interview process, how the shock snapped at me like wolves at my heels, which was the dumbest metaphor than simile I'd ever heard. I have to hear it again. Makes me wonder how he got in. Oh, wait, no, I know. The truth is that he was born to a low middle-class family, by no means rich, but not broke either. His grandfather was a wealthy investment banker or did some city job, I don't really recall. Anyway, his grandfather, estranged from the family, paved a way to reconnect with his grandson and pulled a couple of favours, and managed to shift his BBC at O-level to an unconditional offer at Oxford to read law. Except he didn't end up becoming a lawyer at all, obviously. A teacher right here. What's missing is the middle, though. Though, I'm so glad Uncle Emilio coaxed me out of the house to go pub a couple weeks ago, because what were the chances that we'd run into his ex-wife of all people? Lovely woman, very talkative after half a glass of red. Even between uni and her, there are some missing bits, though. I slip my earphone out and hear the mental chatter attack me. I squint, slightly disoriented, then focus, scanning the crowd. I skip over Amelia and her poetic floating, away from Alex's buzzing, right past that weird kid. What's his name? Ah, Lucas! And his weird fetish and how he'd like nothing to do but come out and whack one out before his first class. Or get with Amy Waters in the cubicle. Girls, ugh. Anyway, I go straight to Cross. I have to fight at first, really get into his head and still down, planting my head and clutching my bag and my lap tighter, feeling the sweat form on my brow. His mind is broad, knowledgeable, arrogant. I do notice in the midst of things that he actually believes what he says. That's nice. I wish I could cling to my stupid convictions like he. I have to push to do so, but I detect something faint, a feeling. Beneath all the smart words and lesson plans, past the staff dinners where he plans to wow Susan, Mrs. Dennett, about his knowledge on the world government and predictions of China, there's something strange. A longing. His ex-wife is there, slowly twirling in the fairy lights while all the strangers giggle and clap. Other thoughts creep up, her crooked smile at dawn on their honeymoon, eyes half closed in fatigue, the way her eyes look angry and pained when they argue, the sight of her slamming the front door for the last time, then the papers in the post a few weeks later. I get out of there as soon as I can and make my ears sing from how quickly I cram my earphones in my ears. Get Gone from Fiona Apple is playing, low and a comfort. My hands are drenched, and I work to control my breathing. Amelia's hand is resting on my shoulder, and she's whispering to me. I don't hear at first. Why? I panic, eyes wide and wild. Then I take a breath. Freaking duh, I think. She removes an earphone, pulls my hair back, and whispers again. The room explodes in applause, or so it feels. I look up, and the room feels surreal. The wood is too dark, the chairs too uncomfortable, the ceiling too high. I shiver and shake, feeling my whole being convulse. Amelia speaks again, and I look at her, then try my best smile that clearly said I was okay. Her look shows disbelief, and I crumple, feeling completely burnt out. I stand before we are dismissed, and Amelia guides me out to the corridor, airier than that freaking place. Why was he thinking about her now? He couldn't have been doing that while giving an introductory speech, surely. I shake it off and scrunch my shoulders. I'm all right, really. I have to be. Today's the day I see him again.
So what have we got up next?
We have a piece by me, which is, the background is, one of my friends is kind of going through a breakup, and what kind of friend would I be if I didn't write about her pain, you know?
Obviously, I mean, you have real.
These opportunities are there for you. You take them in both hands.
Carpe diem.
So I hope she's not listening, but you know. God, I sound like an awful friend already.
Yeah.
Friendship over.
Yeah. Someone once told you that strings of fate tie you to the people you're meant to meet. Tiny, invisible cords linking your heart to theirs, pulling you together when you're supposed to be. You don't really believe it, but it's a cute notion nonetheless. But one day, when there's a dog curled up on the two of you, and you're on the seventh episode of your Friends marathon, you wonder if maybe fate is playing a game with you, because how else can you explain the perfect little twist of fate which brought you together? And when you figure it all out, what the two of you are doing, where you might be going, and understand that whatever happens, you're in it together. You believe it even more. And okay, you're about to face challenges, but it'll be all right. You're prepared. You're in it for the long haul. The first tugs at the string do nothing. Fate is stronger than what it tests, after all. But every string is different, and some are more long-lasting than others. Nobody said that fate means forever. And one day, one regular day when the sun is shining but the air is cold from the aftermath of rain, something changes. A new decision, which alters things for you both. Nothing big, nothing really seems to change, but it's there. A thin fray, so slight that nobody would notice. It's the start. It takes you years to realise, but this is where it begins to end. Over the years, distance constantly tugging at what you're trying so hard to preserve, the string between the two of you starts to weaken. It's still there, though, tired and wary, but there. You begin to notice the changes, though, the weakening of the ties which once bound you so tightly, and your plans, mapped out in the vast lands of forever, suddenly seem uncertain. It's nothing personal. A change of plan, a different decision, a new way of thinking, each bring about phrases which slowly unravel the string which is pulled harder and harder every day. And you can feel it, this weakening bond, and you both do everything to fix it, to knot it together clumsily in an attempt at forever. But all threads wear out, sooner or later. You make the decision together. Clean breaks hurt less. And, together, the edges of your fingers brushing against the scissors of your decision, you cut the string. The ends, unravelling and loose, hang between you, two pieces of fate which try to fit you together for as long as it could. But there are smiles, sad and nostalgic, and a feeling of rightness seeps into your being. Because fate isn't the same as eternity, but it was good all the same. So you walk away, the remnants of your past still sore in your heart. But you're going to be okay. There are other strings which you follow, leading you home where there's sympathy, crappy movies, and an abundance of chocolate from your friends. After all, soulmates don't just come in one form.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. It really was. It was breathtaking.
Cheers.
It's like a bullet to the heart. In a good way.
you're welcome.
Yeah,
put
yeah.
Put lights out, Warren. But honestly, that was really good.
Well, thank you.
I don't know. Every time you write and I listen to it, it's just really good.
You sound suspicious.
Like, you're just looking at me and you're really like, what are you doing? Thank you. That's really sweet of you. So the next couple of pieces we've got, our Jabberwocky editor, Jack. He was supposed to be with us, but he's stuck in Derby and he hasn't quite told us why.
Yeah.
Maybe he's with Joe.
Yes, maybe that's probably
it.
Why they're
disappeared. They're in like cahoots with each other doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something.
That's how sordid, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Well, heard it here first. But our magazine, The Jabberwocky, is being released next week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Jack has all of the details, but we're going to read a couple of short poems from one of our members as a kind of preview of what's in store for
Brilliant. When
you get the free magazine next week.
So these are by one of our members, Ed Wallace, who's on semester abroad, but he wrote these last term and they're honestly amazing. So this first one is called Throw. I sit and watch. I'm seated as I gaze. Trees fill this view to beyond the horizon. But none of this I see. Only you, your betrayal, your back through the trees, leaving. 40 paces with this knife of mine, accurate. You've barely gone 10, 15, 20. I do it, you know. Take the throw. In my dreams of late. But never once can I know. And this other one is called Old Thoughts. The shattered remnants of old thoughts dot the garden of the mind. Experience is the rain of life. It makes them grow, sending tendrils to the sky. Beyond the hedgerows, where no one goes, there's always more. If the mind is a garden, then I'm a poor keeper, for the tall grass grows and dances as it wills in the gentle wind that blows. The question is then begged, of course, of what surrounds a patch of thoughts. Perhaps outside the garden grow other things, other thoughts, other gardens, and somewhere possibly a heart enthroned, for after all, the emotions are rarely rational.
Oh, that was beautiful.
It was, yeah.
So yes, if you pick up the magazine when it is scattered around campus, there will be that, some stuff from the committee, and a few things from our other members as well.
What else have you got coming up this week?
Well, this week we have our romance lit circle, because obviously it is Valentine's Day next week. That's going to be... it should be good. We're going to try and keep it clean.
As clean as possible.
Because, what do you think is going to happen?
You know what's going to happen.
Okay, the past 2 years, the 50 Shades of Grey generator came up in our romance lit circle.
You make a point.
And then the year after that, the euphemism generator
came up. Oh, my God. No. We don't talk about that.
A little bit cleaner this year because
that's terrible.
I'll bring a
some things just water. Can't be unheard.
You will have to fill us in on Sunday to tell us like what shenanigans you got up to on.
Yeah.
Oh, we will.
In the vaguest terms possible.
Yes.
We'll all be traumatised and using you guys as kind of therapists to let us out our experiences.
Just keep it PG. We're before the watershed.
Yeah.
So we have that on Wednesday, 7 till 9 in Trent, LG11. And that should be a lot of fun and potentially concerning, but mostly fun. And on Thursday, we have our free writing session in room 104 of Hallwood. Mm-hmm. Again, 7 till 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. So if you want to just come write literally anything. Yeah. And then apart from that, we have obviously next Sunday the radio here.
Excellent. Well, I'm counting down the days until you're all back again. Because it's always brilliant.
This is URN. The Drama Show Breakdown.